Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Woohoo!
Yes. Finger guns and everything.
Finger guns and everything.
Yeah. So Aman, what are we talking about today?
We are going to be discussing a show that came out in 2019. Oh, and
it's already been that long. I didn't realize
I know. Mm-hmm. It's called Raising Dion. It's on Netflix. And they've announced a second season. Woo-hoo. So I'm excited about that because this was a really good show.
Yes. So good. Aman watched it. When it came out, right? Did you watch it right when it came out?
Not right when it came out. I mean, I watched it sometime last year.
Pre-pandemic or post-pandemic?
I'm not sure. I think it might have been right at the start of the pandemic.
Okay.
I think it might have been one of my pandemic watches.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
When it first started.
Yeah.
When the pandemic first started.
And I remember, so this show was based off of a comic, right? Pretty sure
yes.
It is. And
yes, it is.
I've read like a few pages because there was a preview of this comic and I read that. And then I heard it was being turned into a show, all these things. So
you actually recommended it to me.
Yeah, I did. Yes. Yes. I can't remember now like where I read it or what exactly I read. And then I kept meaning to watch it. And for some reason, I just kept putting it off. But I finally watched it this week. And it is so good. I binged it, had to binge it to record this episode. But yeah, so it's about this kid who basically wakes up one day and he has superpowers. He's
yeah.
7/8-year-old kid. And he can do things like telekinesis and
moving things around with his mind. And
right.
He teleports and becomes invisible. Like it's
sort of
invisible. a whole host of things. It's a whole host of things that he can do all of a sudden.
Right. And he's being raised by his single mom. And
who obviously freaks out when he starts
naturally, doing
things.
Naturally. Yeah. And then throughout the show, we also find out that his dad was a scientist, but he was killed recently. He was a storm chaser. So the explanation given is that like he was killed while chasing one of those storms. So yeah, so that's how it starts off. And this show is just, it touches on so much more than just like a little kid getting superpowers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And
it's amazing how much it touches on.
Yeah.
In terms of like real world themes and lessons and what is appropriate behavior, I think, in many different kinds of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Are you playing with something? Were you playing with something?
I was.
Yeah. Okay. Come on. We can all hear it.
Sorry.
Okay. Now, yeah. So, right. So it touches on a lot of things. First off, the kid, obviously, his name is Dion. Dion and his parents are both Black Americans. And this show is
set. All three of
them. Yes. The show is set in Atlanta, which I thought was cool, too. I feel like they brought aspects of the city of Atlanta into the show, too, which I really liked. And so, naturally, they also talk about racism and struggles of single parenthood and things like that. They definitely touch on those sorts of themes throughout the show, which I'm glad. Like I thought for a sec when I was watching, when I first started the show, I thought they were just going to sort of like allude to racism, but they straight up talk about it at some points too.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, early on in the show, Dion's mom, Nicole, she has a conversation with her sister about having the conversation with Dion, you know, and all of a sudden there's a part in this where Dion's superpowers kind of play in, but also don't, you know, I mean, and they have this very deep, Nicole has this very deep conversation with her sister, you know, and they were like, he's too young for me to have this conversation with him. And they're like, well, you know, if mom had had that conversation with, I guess, their brother, then he wouldn't have something happened to their brother, which may have been averted if he had known a little bit younger in life that about how the world works, about how people view Black men and assume certain things about them, you know? And she's like, look, you're not a bad kid, but people are going to assume that you are a bad kid, you know? And I mean, that's a really tough conversation to have with a, very innocent 7-year-old, you know, but at the same time, they make it so clear that this was a conversation that she did need to have with him and needed to have with him at a really young age.
I also, just going back to the conversation between Nicole and her sister Kat, when they're going back and forth on it and like weighing the pros, like Nicole, it's so sad. It's so heartbreaking because Nicole was telling her sister, she was like, my kid just lost his father. He's moved to a new school. He doesn't have any friends. He's only 7 years old. And now you want me to tell him about racism in the world. Like, how much more do you want me to lay on him? You know, and it just, and it does feel so like, it just, it sucks. You know, it's so shitty. Like, this is what a lot of, you know, underrepresented minority groups kind of go through. They have to have certain conversations. And
Black Americans more than most other minorities.
Especially, well, in America. For sure.
In America. Yes. We are talking about America here.
Right. So yeah, that was interesting. I'm glad they just straight up talked about it. Cause at one point, you know, when Dion, he's getting these superpowers, but he doesn't have full control over them. And so his mom takes him out of school for a couple of days just to be like, what the hell's going on? You know, like figure out. And then basically when she sends him back into school, she's like, Dion, you have to control yourself. You know, you can't let anyone see you like this. And I thought they were going to leave it at that because you could tell already there was that parallel between like superpowers, racism, you know, happening there.
Yeah.
But so I'm glad they took it in step even further. And we're just like, no, so this principal here is racist. Like, you know,
they didn't. The nice thing is that they didn't just bring up these themes sort of as metaphors or parallels for actual real world problems that people go through in terms of how our society is structured. They had them running in parallel at the same time, you know, as a, that this whole superpower thing was another issue on top of everything else that the show touches upon. And I thought that was really good. It really grounded, I think, all of the problems that people go through in this very non-grounded show, you know? I mean, it's a show about this kid and other people who have superpowers, but it very, very much takes place in the real world as we know it when you, when we look out our window, you know? And I thought that was really well done.
Oh, I mean, yeah, the, even in the first episode, also, warning, we're going to be spoiling the show left and right throughout this episode.
Yeah, so, so many spoilers.
If it wasn't clear already. So, and I mean, in the first episode, they basically show Nicole is frantically trying to get ready in the morning, trying to get Dion ready in the morning to get to go to school. And she was like, oh my God, I cannot be late to work, cannot be late to work. And of course, that is the morning that Dion like gets his crazy powers. And oh, and then, you know, the drop off line of cars at the school to drop kids off is super long and all these things. She ends up being late. She got fired. And it's like, you know, struggles of pretty much anyone in the world. Right. And how inflexible so many companies are towards parents in particular, like, so crazy. And shoot, where was I going with this? I was going somewhere with this. Damn.
The world outside our window.
No,
it's the real world.
Right. I was trying to make a connection of like, I lost it. It was a good
thought. It's okay.
It was a good thought.
It's okay. I'm sure it was very profound.
It'll come back to me. But yeah, point is like, it touches on all these other things, like trying to keep a job, trying to get your kid to school on time, you know?
And, you know, other things that the show ends up touching upon. Dion makes a friend who is with this girl who is disabled. She's wheelchair bound. And there's a part of it where Dion wanting to help his friend sort of lifts her out of the chair with his mind, because he was like, I thought I was helping you. And she then really has to make it clear to him, like, I am not broken. This is just who I am. You don't need to fix something. And that was another aspect that they brought into the show in parallel, that, you know, people who are disabled or differently abled, however you want to view it, does not, just because they are not abled in the same way that most people are, who have not been in any kind of an accident or had some type of disease take away some physical ability of theirs, doesn't mean they are broken, doesn't mean that they need to be fixed. And that was, I thought, a really profound lesson for a young superhero to learn.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Dion's got all these powers. Right. Compared to him, we're all disabled.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it was really nice that the writers were able to weave this character in to teach Dion this very valuable lesson, which I hope they build on in season two, that where he learns that, you know, just because he is capable of more things doesn't mean that the people around him are disabled or less capable or need to be fixed somehow. I thought that was really well done.
That whole friendship, the evolution of their friendship between Dion and Esperanza, was so cute, because he was like, I don't want to be friends with her, she's a girl, you know, and he's trying to be friends with these like skater boys, which I'm like, how are you skater boys? You're literally 7 years old. But anyway, so I was like, I don't understand this. But I love how Esperanza was never fazed by Dion.
Oh yeah.
Like being like, no, ew, I don't want to hang out with you, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, he's my best friend, he just doesn't know it. But I just, all the kids, everyone was really well cast, but I was very, very impressed with the kids in particular.
Yeah. So, yeah. Absolutely. Excellent portrayals on screen. They were able to show the character development without ever, without it ever feeling disingenuous.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the age of the kids. Sometimes you have kids that are going through these arcs that are too mature for their age, you know? And with the show, they were able to do it in a way where it didn't feel disingenuous. Their growth felt very, their arcs felt normal for their age. And that's a hard thing to pull off. It's a hard thing to pull off.
Yeah. If it was, it was really good. It was, go ahead.
I was just going to say that we should switch to talking about Pat.
Wait, I remembered something for, I remembered my thought that I was going to bring up.
Go for it.
So I was trying to say that, you know, Nicole was really struggling, obviously, with these like everyday life things. Not every day, hopefully for everyone, but you know, she just lost her husband. She's grieving while trying to also help her child grieve for losing his father and help her child adjust to a new school. And she's trying to keep her job, not able to keep her job, trying to find a new job then. And then, you know, like she's got all these like other, like paying the bills, blah, blah, blah. Then her kid gets superpowers. And then she tries to tell her sister, who is a doctor, and she's not believed. And
yes,
that was another thing that was just so, it was like so sad and so tragic, where it's like someone is literally crying for help and they're not being believed too, you know? Right. And that is so, and that I love that they tackled that at near the end of the season too, you know, where finally the sister sees it, like something crazy happened with Dion. And she's like, I'm so sorry, I never believed you. And I can't believe you were dealing with this on your own. So yeah, I mean, that's another thing too. You know, we all, we struggle with that as a society. If something sounds way too much or way too crazy or whatever, we're just like, no, like I'm not gonna, there's so much gaslighting that happens, especially for women, especially single moms, you know? And
yeah,
they just think like, oh, women are just hysterical.
But the thing is that the interesting thing about this is that this was for Nicole, the person who she is closest to, her own sister.
Yeah.
Something so insane is going on, but most of us don't have the communication skills to be able to transmit something crazy going on in your life to somebody else in a way that makes sense all the time. Now, in this particular case, obviously, somebody tells me their kid's got superpowers. I'm going to also say you're in a rubber room nut house.
Really? Because I would be like, oh my God, that's amazing. Can I see? Like,
I mean, you know, to be fair to Nicole's sister, whose name I am also forgetting right now.
Her name is Kat.
To be fair to Kat, she's a doctor. She's looking through at her sister, who is going through a lot of things that can lead to a mental break.
Yeah.
And she hears something that is actually not a proven real thing in the world and says, okay, my sister is going through a mental breakdown.
But that's not really how she reacted. Her reaction to Nicole was to just yell at her to like get her shit together. You are a mother, you know, like you need to get a handle on your life and stuff, which is
the
total opposite of what you should be doing for someone who is going through shit, you know?
Yeah.
And who is asking for help. And there has to be better ways really for our society to respond to something like that, you know?
Well, you know, and this famous line from that show Scrubs, people are bastard covered bastards with bastard filling.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, and society is made up of people who are all bastard covered bastards with bastard filling.
Okay, great, Iman. So yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, I mean, there has to be a better way to respond to someone who appears to not be doing mentally well, or like not be doing the normal things, right? Than just like screaming at them, or let's say calling it's the cops on them and then getting them shot, because that has happened way too many times in America as well, where we don't have any proper social workers responding to something where we need someone who has people skills and not really bad shooting skills.
Yeah, that's true. That is a problem.
Yeah. So that's, I was thinking about that a lot, that just feeling of that frustration that just comes with not being believed, where you're just kind of being gaslighted and you're trying to just keep your kid safe.
And you can tell throughout the whole show that Nicole feels alone.
Yeah.
That she feels very, very alone. Mm-hmm. She has friends, she has family, and they are not able to give her the kind of support that she needs to not feel alone.
Right. Like her friends are always like, why aren't you dating someone now? And she's like, I literally don't care, nor do I have time. Like I'm trying to
priorities.
Yeah. Like,
priorities.
And also as she's, you know, throughout the show, as they all find out more about Dion's superpowers, then they find out that the dad, Mark Warren, he had powers as well. And he got powers because of his research he was doing in Iceland. Other people were there. There was a whole Aurora event, blah, blah, blah. Okay. He got powers and he got them before Dion was born. And that's how it got passed on to Dion.
Yep.
So, but when Nicole finds this out, she's like, why didn't he tell me? You know?
Yeah.
So she's feeling betrayed as well, which makes her feel even lonelier because it's like, wow, this person who I loved with everything in me, like didn't even open up to me. And we could have done this together. Like we were supposed to be a team, all this stuff. So many emotions. There's so many emotions wrapped up in this show.
It's really well done. There's a lot of things in this show. I mean, just having this conversation, I'm like, I got to watch this again now, you know, because there's much to digest here that you can't even get it all in one viewing.
Yeah, you really can't. I probably should rewatch it at some point because I was binge watching it. And so,
and I mean, it's not just about Nicole feeling betrayed. It's also her dead husband, Mark, you know, going through his own process of trying to understand what the hell happened to him, you know? And he, in a sense, they kind of get into the show. He's worried about the same reaction from Nicole as what Nicole got from her sister. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what he was trying to avoid. Like, right. I don't even understand what happened to me. How am I supposed to explain this and burden somebody I love with this?
Yeah.
You know,
but the thing is, I don't know. My whole thing is like, once you can show someone, look, I can levitate something, you know, I mean,
right.
What are they going to say? Oh, okay. All right. Let's figure this out now. You know, like, I mean, that's the only whatever. So that whole like, and they talk about that too, the whole like, I'm a man and I can solve my own problems and blah, blah, blah.
I got my shit.
Yeah. I don't need to ask for directions. Like, okay.
I don't need to ask for directions. Yeah, like that kind of sums up everything literally. That Mark Warren does perfectly. I don't need to ask for directions. Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a perfect segue into the character Pat. Who is not okay. The sister Cat with a C, but Pat with a P.
Short for Patrick?
Patrick. Well, yeah, sure.
I assume it's short for Patrick or...
Yes.
Paternicus, maybe? I don't know.
Probably not Paternicus. Probably okay. not. Anyway, Pat is Mark, the dad's best friend. He's an engineer, works at the same company that Mark did, Biona, whatever.
And they were partners in their storm chasing.
Right. And he basically went with Mark to do all this research on storms. But he went to Iceland with Mark. And he's also Dion's godfather. So after Mark died, you know, he checks in on them. He drops Dion off to school and picks him up a lot of times and blah, 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 blah. So, yep. You know. Friend of the family, all these things. And so he's one of the first people that Nicole and Dion basically, well, not on purpose, but he sees Dion use his powers. Right. And he's like, oh my God. And he's super into comics and nerdy stuff. And he's like, oh my gosh, okay, so this is what we should do. And, you know, he has all these ideas on how to help. And at first we're led to believe that Mark did not get any powers because he stayed in the yurt at Iceland. But then we find out that he did actually get powers. And in fact, he is the bad guy.
Bum, bum.
So
it was quite a big reveal.
It was a huge reveal. I literally gasped when I watched it. I was like, so yeah, throughout the show, they talk about how there's other people who are in Iceland. They got these superpowers, but they're all kind of slowly disappearing or they're getting killed, similar to Mark.
Yeah.
And they don't know how or why. But then they find out that there's this literal storm with lightning in the shape of a man that is coming after them and killing them and all this stuff. That's how he got Mark. And Pat is the storm. So that's what we find out. And apparently he's in incredible pain or whatever. I don't know. So Pat is actually bitter about it all because he didn't really get the typical superpowers of like invisibility, telekinesis, all this stuff. He actually is in a terrible amount of pain. And then when it gets too out of hand, at least is what I think, he turns into the storm and starts like gravitating towards the superpowered people and then like killing.
And kind of starts hunting them basically.
Yeah. I thought at first, was he like absorbing them to become even more powerful? But no, I think he just kills them.
Yeah, I think he just kills them. But I think that absorbing the other people thing is kind of like the pain management.
Yeah.
He needs, it's his opioid.
Yeah.
So murder is his opioid.
Right. So what's really interesting in this show is that, you know, when you first meet his character, you're like, oh, cool. He's a nerdy best friend and the godfather. Right. And he's so nice. He's so endearing, he's great with Dion, he cares about him so much and all this stuff, and
huge dork,
super huge dork, all this stuff, but he's also super smart and he's helping however he can. And then kind of slowly, you know, obviously he's spending more time with Nicole and Dion, he starts to get feelings for Nicole, which at first I was like, ugh, why is the show doing this? Why are they taking it in this direction? So stupid. Right. I hate when they force romantic relationships. And, you know, he like kisses her and she's not feeling it. She's like, that's weird. It's not what I want. Like, I just wanted us to be friends. Like, you're my husband's best friend. All this stuff, right? She says that to him. He gets cranky and bitter about it. And then he starts becoming more and more aggressive. And you find out that basically he wanted to get close to all of them, because Dion potentially has very strong healing powers and could heal him. And really, all he could have done was ask nicely and they probably could have figured it out. But instead, he became a storm of toxic masculinity and white male privilege who does not respect people's boundaries.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. Actually, you know, I never thought about it. The storm as a metaphor.
Yeah.
For that perfect storm.
Yeah, honestly.
of white male privilege, toxic masculinity, and disrespectful of other people's wishes.
Yeah. And I love that in one conversation between Nicole and Dion, where Dion's like, I don't get why Esperanza's upset when I had her fly out of her chair, you know, like everyone wants to fly. Why wouldn't she? And then his mom is like, Dion, do you know what boundaries are? And then, you know, and they basically have this one conversation, but about two different topics. You know, one is about, you know, Dion respecting Esperanza and not trying to fix her just because she's in a wheelchair. And also Nicole trying to set her boundaries with Pat, who is not respecting it, who is not really taking her seriously or anything. And they also showed that flashback scene of like some previous girlfriend with Pat and her, and she's trying to break up with him. And he's like, no, no, you just don't know what you want. You know, like you just need to, we just need to do this and that. And she's like, no, I am telling you very clearly what I do want. And you are not listening. And so I thought that was so well done where they just captured both of those things in one conversation.
Yeah. I mean, Pat is also, he's somebody who is also so nerdy, so dorky, so lacking in social skills.
Yeah.
That, you know, I thought it was interesting that he's going through this thing of being him, you know, and he's not handling it well.
Right.
Basically, you know, he doesn't handle well the fact that he is not going to be the most desirable person to everybody around.
Right.
And being around his friend Mark, who is played by the very savvy and very sexy Michael B. Jordan.
How did we not even talk about that? Oh my God. Yeah. Right. It was amazing.
I mean, like, that's gotta create some turmoil within Pat, and he's not handling it well. Yeah. I mean, he is absolutely an example of what is the wrong way to be yourself.
Right. Yes. And that, you know, maybe there are things you should talk to a therapist about rather than just get aggressive with your friends and family.
Yeah. And your friends' widows.
Right. So
awkward and creepy. And that was creepy.
I was just, he really was just so, everything about it. And, but the whole trajectory of it that they showed throughout the show where it's like, oh, he's just like this really endearing, adorable, dorky guy who's so nice, you know, he's like bringing them Chinese food when they've had a rough day and all this stuff to Nicole and Dion and all that, you know? And, you know, this also reminded me a lot of a movie I saw recently, which was like nominated for Oscars. I don't know. I don't think you've seen it, Iman, but I don't know. Have you heard of it? It's called A Promising Young Woman.
I have heard of it. Yes. Yeah. I've not seen it, but I remember you telling me about it.
Right. So, I mean, and that basically that whole movie is about turning the whole nice guy trope on its head. And, you know, just because someone is nice, you know, anyone can be nice, you know, anyone can buy you some lunch or anyone can offer you a ride home and things like that. But it's very, very different than someone respecting your boundaries, for example.
Yes.
Or being listening to you and your concerns and needs and whatever. And
being nice is not something that needs to be paid back.
Yes.
I think that is, from what you've told me about A Promising Young Woman, that is seems to be one of the themes and lessons. True kindness, true niceness is doing something kind and nice and really, truly, genuinely not expecting something in return.
Right.
Kindness and niceness is only kind and nice when it is done purely for its own sake.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you do it expecting something in return, it is now no longer a nice nor a kind thing. It is a transaction.
And he constantly brings that up. He's like, I've done all these things for you. I've done this for you, that for you, blah, blah, blah. And I think you're just taking advantage of me and all this stuff. And which is really like anyone who wants to see what an unhealthy relationship looks like, that is it. So
that's a great example of that. Yeah.
If you see that and also a potential love interest, run away. It's a huge red flag.
Huge red flag. Also, like, it's a lesson on both sides here, you know? Yes, it's a red flag, but also, like, this is not how you form a relationship with somebody. Yeah. It's not the right way to do it. It's not the healthy way to do it. There are other ways that are healthier, that are normal in the sense of like how it should be done, respecting people and things like that.
Also, this doesn't even just go for romantic relationships. This is like any relationship, any friendship,
relationship. Like, absolutely.
Like, that's just
absolutely.
How it
works. It's not just about romantic relationships. You're absolutely right. Any relationship, whether it's family, friends, whatever, all of these things are relationships. Mm-hmm. And doing something nice, expecting something in return, is not the right way.
Yeah.
To manage that relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to say, sorry, were you about to say something?
No, no, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say one of the biggest twists for me upon finding out that Pat was actually the bad guy of the show wasn't just finding out that Pat was the bad guy of the show, but it was also finding out that the corporation was not the bad
guy. Was not the bad guy.
That was equally as much a twist for me as finding out who the bad guy really was.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very true. And the corporation's name is Biona.
Yeah.
B-I-O-N-A. Biona. I don't remember how they pronounce it.
They work in the hard sciences. I think they do a lot of defense contracting. I mean,
they research weather patterns. Yeah.
That's really is the recipe for what makes an evil corporation, you know? Right. If you were designing a corporation to be evil, it would be everything that this corporation is.
Yeah.
And then to find out that they're not the bad guys.
Yeah. I was like, that's awesome, actually.
And then they were trying to be helpful.
Yeah. But the reason why they're not helpful is because I think they lack people skills.
Yes.
And because they're just these scientists who are going after data and all this stuff. You know, they basically, you find out that they've been keeping track of Dion throughout the show or most of it. And they want his data, right? They want to study him. They want to analyze him, but they don't think about the fact that he's an 8-year-old kid or that his mom is not cool with that.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things where any organization or company or corporation or what have you, when it becomes large, very, very large, you know, they, in a sense, take on a personality of their own. You know, we talk a lot about society. Society is also, you know, it's made up of individual people, but we talk about society because when it becomes a group of people large enough, it takes on a personality and characteristics of their own that are independent of the individuals that make them up. Mm-hmm. And in that same way, when you have a company or a corporation that is as large as Biona is, you know, they have their own interests in terms of their bottom line, in terms of the demands of shareholders and clients or what have you, you know, which are very, very much disconnected from the people that run it. You know, like the individual scientist that is working in that lab studying that weird creature from Iceland that can become invisible, you know, he or she, you know, they probably go home to a family and have dinner and take out or cook or help their kids with homework or what have you. And those are human interests. Mm-hmm. But when they come to work and they're doing this work, the interests that lead to them doing that work have nothing to do with this person's family or home obligations or what have you. It is about something totally different.
Right.
And that disconnect makes it so easy to assume that a corporation is evil, but really it's that their interests are not those of right. us as individuals.
Right. And the perfect example of that was the scene where, you know, Dion was in the hospital, he was feeling mm-hmm. sick, and then he got better, and then he's leaving. And then they just show up in these hazmat suits and they're like, we have a level 3 quarantine situation. We have to take them away. And Nicole's like, what the hell are you talking about? You know? And they literally just drag him away in a van. And she's yeah. like, what? Like, I was like, why couldn't she like ride along in the another second van, you know? And then y'all can have a nice conversation. No, like they're like, we just need to take him. Like,
yeah, I mean, that also to me seemed, that was probably the least believable part of the show to me, because I can't imagine any corporation letting that happen mm-hmm. because it is still made up of people. Like somebody would have been like, is this a 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid? Yeah. And that's his mom. Like,
right. Like there's definitely that happening to me. There's like so many legal issues they would get into from doing that.
Also, legal issues.
Right. So we were talking earlier about what this corporation reminded us of, right, Iman?
We were talking about how, you know, companies, corporations are really, really bad sometimes at communicating with people, you know, with the populace. And my immediate thought on that went to the CDC's communications to the American public recently. During this pandemic, regarding advice on mask wearing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They followed the science and, you know, good credit to them, credit to the White House for not getting in their way, even though they very clearly made some bad calls here in terms of their messaging. I'm specifically thinking about, you know, a few months ago when they were like, okay, masks are not necessary anymore.
Yeah.
And
if you're vaccinated.
And then backtracking that, you know, did that follow the science? Yes. But any numbskull, all right, who looks around the world on them would be like, if you say no mask mandates, the way things are going, you're going to need them again. How about you just keep them?
Yeah.
And not tell people, don't go back and forth. It doesn't play well, you know?
I mean,
and they didn't seem to do that. And I don't understand why they didn't do that. The only explanation I can think of is that they did, quote unquote, follow the science without taking human psychology into account at all.
Right. And I mean, that's the thing. Their strong suit is just following the science, which is great, obviously. Like
they hard science. That. Yes. Good. Great. So, wonderful. Beautiful.
Right. Like we want people who understand data and know how to collect it and know how to do things with it. Great. That's awesome. What they need more is like a stronger PR department or a communications department, you know? And you're right. Like they just didn't take into account human psychology and
how this would play in the minds of the American public.
Right.
Especially since so many of us could see that this would have to be rescinded and down the road.
Well, yeah, but also, and then my argument is that I feel for them a tiny, tiny bit because I don't think any one of us could have predicted how politicized this pandemic would get. But
here's my rebuttal to that. Mm-hmm. It became hyper politicized well before the Biden administration came into power and told the CDC, do whatever you need to do. Like this politicization was super clear a year before.
But I also think that like too many people, myself included, I think too many people thought that way more problems were just going to go away once Trump left office and once Biden, a more rational administration, would come in, that things would just be better and that, you know, like other like Republican governors would come in line and whatever.
Calm down a little.
Yeah. And get their shit together. And that didn't happen at all. And like this, just because Trump is not in office doesn't mean he's not causing chaos. So yeah.
I mean, the chaos that he started is still rolling.
Exactly. That's my point.
It's gained a momentum of its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much so.
So I don't know. I just feel like, they just really need a better communications department.
It's so bad.
It's really bad. Yeah. So anyway, similar to Bayana, they could have done that better.
Yes, they could have done that better. Yeah. I think, though, that there is a good lesson here in terms of like not assuming that a large organization that is bad as communicating is actually, or that they have malintent. Mm-hmm. Not to say that we should assume all corporations are good. Some of them truly are evil.
Not taking that stance at all.
Not taking that stance at all. But just saying, as with anything, let's take a moment and look beneath the surface a little bit and try to figure out what's really going on.
Right.
You know, what are the actual interests that are driving certain decisions, whether it's by a large organization, a company, the government, an agency in the government, or even an individual politician that may be trying to operate within a system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, looking at the actions of the governors of Texas, Arizona, Florida, where they are making it illegal to mandate a mask anywhere within their state. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, personally, I don't understand how you can win the votes of people who are dead.
Right.
But in the short run, I can still kind of see how this is a good political move on their parts to get more votes for their next election or to maintain their lead in votes for the next election. I can kind of see how that interest, how that incentive is driving some of this decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And however, I do have to say the end result of that, really bad, you know, really, really bad. If you're going to make it illegal for school districts to protect their students and teachers, mm-hmm. that is a bad, evil thing that happened.
Yeah.
However, there is an interest there. There's an explanation. Looking at it, thinking about it a little bit critically, you can see how these decisions or why such decisions get made. Mm-hmm. And it's the same case in the going back to the show Raising Dion. You have this company, Bayana. Because corporations still aren't people.
Right.
I don't care what the Supreme Court says. They did this really dumb thing of just taking Dion away. All right.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that incentivized that decision, though, was we are studying this area in Iceland that was affected by this anomaly that mm-hmm. resulted in some very, very odd things happening and some very dangerous things happening. This kid is clearly one of those odd, potentially hyper dangerous things that is in our control. We need to take him, see what's going on, make sure that he's not a danger to himself or others.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's your interest, your incentive for a course of action, which was then carried out in the worst way possible,
right?
Which is to snatch a kid away from his mother's arms, almost literally in the case of this show.
It was literally, you know? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, literally. I can't remember if she was literally holding him when they pulled him away or if he was like on a stretcher.
No, she had her arms wrapped around him.
Okay, so literally snatching a child away from his mother, you know, I mean, that is a bad thing. You look at the interests and the incentives behind what's happening, you can see why that decision was made. Doesn't make it a right decision, but the more we understand about why things happen, the better I think each of us as individuals can understand the world. And when it comes to ourselves, make the right decisions on how to do things.
Yeah. Excellent TED Talk, Amon.
I should be a TED Talker.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Is that what they're called, TED Talkers?
I don't know, actually. But anyway, I think our time is wrapping up, though, now.
That's
true. So, yeah.
If you haven't seen the show, watch it. The second season's coming out, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's a really good show. You'll literally cover all kinds of topics like love and racism and grief and superpowers and, you know, the corporations.
All of the things. All of the things.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. As always, thanks for listening to Grounded Geeks.
Follow us on Twitter, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.